C6. Number 6B.
Yeah. Now, again, can you see something? Again, I just repeat that over and over, this new way of system thinking. We sometimes long to see that man is but idea. Now, there are always times in our human life where we get fed up with ourselves, with our body, with our human situation or so, and we just feel, oh, how wonderful it would be just to see that there is nothing but ideas, that we are nothing but ideas. But how on earth can we demonstrate that? If that is the problem, well, then we must see that we can only solve it by going further to a higher realm of wholeness. If we go to a higher sense of wholeness, where are we going? We have to take in more than that chapter. And therefore we can see that without the consciousness that we have gained in footsteps of truth, we could not be conscious of a creation of ideas. There is a creation consisting of ideas, but what's the use of it if I'm not conscious of it? The creation of ideas is anyway a creation of ideas and exists anyway and has existed since billions of years. But what's the use of it if I'm not conscious of it? Therefore, that creation becomes only a new creation for me with the consciousness of the 8th chapter. There, I have restructured my human consciousness into a divine consciousness. That consciousness can only be conscious of the ideas of the 7 synonymous terms. And this truth eternally changes my universe, and I am introduced or ushered in experiencing a new creation. So only here we experience that new creation that has existed since time immemorial. So in this chapter, therefore, an important part is concerned with the fact that we always have the idea and the ideal idea as our image, as our ideal in front of us, and that we never lose sight of this ideal idea. Then we use our consciousness of the 8th chapter, we use that, and therefore we take in a new creation. And in this way begin to experience that new creation. Until at the end, really, of the chapter, she says that we are, that we put on the white robes of spirit, which means the complete sevenfold consciousness of spirit, where we are only roaming, really, in the realm of ideas. Now, this cannot be gainsaid. This is the teaching of Mrs. Eddy. And so we come to a next chapter. Signs of Being. It's a big chapter, a terrific chapter, and a chapter that always intrigues every student of Christian Science. It's really that chapter which in the first edition used to be the very first chapter with which it started, and gives us a sense that here we are introduced really into the science of being with a small b, because here the focal point is the individual experience of the infinite one being. The infinite one being, as capital B, is translating itself to the point of idea, and here we experience that science of being. I always like to take this chapter as an example of how valuable a matrix work is. So I deviate quickly on methodology to show you with this something which I feel all over the world where I go seems to be a good example how creative a matrix is. You see, we always have a feeling that man is a creator, that with our human intelligence we create things, and therefore if we create, so to say, a matrix, if we draw up a matrix as we have been doing, that it is always the intelligence of our human brain, our human intelligence, that establishes something. But for the last 20 years or so, the world has awakened. Has awakened. Okay. The world has awakened to the fact, and I will talk about it later on this week, that there are intelligences that are not dependent on the human brain. And a matrix is one of these intelligences. And a matrix is very intelligent. And sometimes it's so intelligent that we can learn from the matrix quite a lot. Now that seems funny that the piece of paper with symbols on it should be intelligent, but that's what I wanted to show with the new system age, that really with the system age we are not performing work, physical work, but mental work, and that one began to see that symbols and language and communication and control and system are intelligences that teach us, that can teach us. For instance, here, you see, when talking in a general way to Christian scientists about Christ, they are very familiar that in the Christian Science language there is such a thing as a Christ. They know that God has a Christ. They know that that Christ is not Jesus, that Jesus and Christ are two different things. And so they feel, yes, God has a Christ, and defines perhaps that Christ. But have you ever read in any periodical, I can't tell you because I don't read them very often or very seldom, but I used to read quite a bit and talk to people in Christian Science quite a bit. Have you ever heard that people were saying, the Christian scientists were saying, that ideas have a Christ? I don't think so. You heard that. If you have a matrix, and if you don't know that ideas have a Christ, the matrix is so intelligent that the matrix tells you that ideas have a Christ. Why? Because the matrix, as we have it in front of us, tells us that that third vertical, which is talking about the realm of ideas, has a point of intersection with the Christ, must have a point of intersection with the Christ, and therefore ideas must have a Christ. So you can see a matrix is a teacher for us. It isn't that we put all the information into the matrix. You only have to put the right information there, the two indices right, and then the matrix begins to teach us. It is creative. We have to get used to the fact that not the human brain is creative and intelligent, that there is an intelligence that is outside of the human brain. This is what happens today in the world, where we begin to see that there are even machines that perform the functions of intelligence, and that these machines perform the function of intelligence not because the machine itself has intelligence, but because the system in it is a system. And the system has intelligence. And system is immaterial. We'll come back to it on the last day, and I will show you that a bit from a different side. But here you begin to value the value of a matrix, not just as a little play which we play, not just as a nice academical jungling with terms, but it is a way of representing, of symbolizing a divine idea, because in being exists such an intelligence that can translate itself to us in many ways, not only through our thinking. It has many other ways today of showing us how to teach us. So here you have a very good example that the very fact that the vertical is has an impact on the horizontal, that it shows, be aware that an idea also has a Christ. What kind of Christ? And we know what kind of Christ it has. We may not have said so expressively, but we always would have said that ideas dissolve illusions. But we have always taken that as just a statement, a statement, and not so much as a Christ activity, as a law of the Christ at work that is able to dissolve an illusion through the right idea. So in this chapter, in this 10th chapter, the whole chapter is about the very fact that ideas have a Christ, that these ideas as a Christ dissolve illusions. Therefore, entertaining ideas is entertaining the Christ of these ideas also. You see, you have first the 9th chapter, where we entertain ideas. That, sorry, did I say that? The 9th chapter, yes, did I say the 9th chapter? Yeah. The 9th chapter where we entertain ideas, ideal ideas, and entertaining those ideas has a Christ, the 10th chapter, showing that entertaining ideas is not just entertaining ideas, but because they have a Christ, is also dissolving illusions. Dissolving what kind of illusions? Any kind of illusions, namely abstract or latent illusions and concrete illusions, both. She shows that through two parts of the chapter. The first part showing how an idea fundamentally in an abstract way is dissolving its opposite illusion to the point where the illusion disappears and the idea alone is left. In the second part, she shows that this is not just an abstraction, but that it is also applicable and also works in the realm of belief. That an idea is omnipotent in the realm of truth, the first part, and is omnipotent in the realm of belief, second part. And you can see that second part very easily from one paragraph to the next. You feel the change from the first part to the second, because the moment she goes to the second part, that's to show that an idea dissolves concrete illusions, concrete error, that she begins to show the historical development of the idea in spite of the human history. That right from Adam, we start right from Adam with the Adam dream, how that Adam dream had to yield and yield step by step by step by step, that over the thousand-year period this dream begins to disappear, to dissolve itself, dissolve itself, until at the end she comes up to the present age and speaks about the present age of divine science, and speaks about the present age of divine science as that science which is our origin. That we have our origin in divine science. For the first time, and the only time in the textbook, she says that. Usually, the origin of man is in God, that man originates in God. Not here. Here, the subject is very different. She shows that the origin of man is divine science. And I know it. I have experienced that. I have experienced that so deeply that it never left me, that it changed my whole life. That divine science is our origin, not God Almighty. When I say not God Almighty, I mean not some indefinite God is my origin. Divine science is something which we can understand. And therefore, as we can understand divine science, we can give birth to us. Just as definitely as we can give birth to a solution to any problem with a science. Without science, you can't do it. You can't just say to any problem in mathematics or physics, God Almighty will do it. But you can solve it through science. And in the same way, we can solve it in the ontological field if we understand divine science, or if we touch at least divine science. Then we can bring ourselves into being. But what are we bringing into being? We are bringing into being ourselves as what? Not as a man, but as the idea of science. That I have experienced. But we can, instead of trying to give birth to what is called the true man, which in a way still is a better mortal, we can say, why don't I give birth to myself not as man, but as the idea of science? Isn't that the mutation? Isn't that what comes after man? I'm always asking that question, you know me, huh? I wouldn't be surprised if you get sick of it to hear me say that again. But something doesn't let me rest. What comes after man? I'm not interested what is man. What comes after man? What is that concept that comes after man? That is no more man. And yet is being. And yet is consciousness. And yet is higher consciousness. And here, I think in this chapter, the science of being, she shows that. That divine science which ushered Jesus into human presence, you see, not God who ushered Jesus into human presence, but divine science, the origin that ushered us into human presence, is divine science. So, this is a terrific chapter. The big tone that also goes through that chapter is the big question, is life, intelligence, and substance in matter? Or is life, substance, intelligence in spirit? And the moment you have life, substance, intelligence in matter, you have an organic sense of being. The moment we have life, substance, intelligence in spirit, we have no more an organic sense of being, and therefore the whole picture and the whole image of a man falls away. And there is only one thing left, and that is the idea. And that idea is a terrific calculus. And the third part of that chapter, the platform, tells us about the fundamental calculus. A fundamental calculus where through the 32 points she depicts again in a matrix the wonderful sense of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. And when you look at it, you will find that that platform has a very specific tone, or many. But one of them is that the main tone lies always on life. The question of truth practically never enters. The question of love practically never enters. It's all about life, about individuality, about eternality, about being. There's a terrific sense of life there. It's a science of being. Of being. Life. And it shows, really, that if we accept this divine science as a calculus, and the whole platform has as its main tone divine science, and shows how that divine science translates itself to absolute Christian science. In that divine science calculus, one finds one's own true being. So, this chapter, therefore, shows us what? In the first part, it shows that an idea is dissolving latent error. That's the first part. You could say it dissolves abstract error or theoretical error. In the second part, it shows that an idea dissolves concrete error. Concrete error. Error that has become flesh. The whole history of man is there shown to be under the impact of the idea, and the idea had to give, and the historical development had to give way to the history of the divine idea. It is a terrific concept here, you know. Here too, you begin to see something that only has begun to be realized over the last 20 years or so in the world. Up to that point, one was always thinking that the thinkers really were thinking new ideas. Today, they begin to see that that is not true. Today, they see that it is the idea, the divine idea, that makes the thinkers think. And actually, this collaborates entirely with what Mrs. Eddy teaches here in this chapter. Up to recently, everybody was thinking that scientists are discovering new sciences and new theories. that the scientist's brain, the scientist's intelligence, is really that which is creative. Now, more and more you can read how they find that it is the other way around, that it is the idea of science itself that makes the scientist. The scientist can't help discovering what he discovered. It is the idea in the universe that will always find that person, that channel, that experience which is transparent enough for the idea to shine through. It isn't that there are clear thinkers and wonderful thinkers that can think something higher than themselves. It is the higher idea, the divine idea, that makes us think what the divine idea wants us to think. And it is only on that basis that we have evolution. It's only on that basis we can witness that in the long run, in the trend, there is a cultural evolution going higher and higher and higher. If we don't consider just the little vibrations in between, but the main trend, we can see that man has had a long history of an upward trend. Who has made that upward trend? Who has invented that upward trend? What can tell a present age what is the next highest stage? Human intelligence is not intelligent enough for that. One begins to realize what Mrs. Eddy tells here in this chapter, that the idea has a Christ. And if the idea has a Christ, it has the Christ to precipitate itself on human consciousness, on world consciousness, and there where it finds a transparent place, a transparent person, a transparent experience, it will shine through, and it appears then to us, but only to us, it appears as if somebody has found something higher. It isn't Jesus, it isn't Mrs. Eddy, it isn't John Dawley who found something higher. It is the divine idea who found a Jesus, who found a Mrs. Eddy, who found a John Dawley, and used them. And they let themselves be used by this idea. That's why every one of us can be a revelator. If he lets himself be used in a transparent way by the idea that is constantly knocking at our consciousness and says, I want you to think higher, I want you to see something higher, I want you, and wants us to be the idea of science. Can you see that? So this is the 10th chapter. Perhaps we can summarize it like this and say, the power of manifestation of ideas, my English sentence may not be correct, the power of manifestation of ideas dispels latent and concrete error. The power of the manifestation of ideas dispels latent